If you've ever had any stomach or digestive distress, you're definitely going to want to listen to this episode. Hey there, welcome to the Inside Sports Nutrition Podcast, your source for all things sports nutrition related. This show is hosted by myself, Bob Sebahar, and my co-host, Dina Griffin. We are both registered dietitians who are board certified specialists in sports dietetics with combined experience exceeding 40 years. We are here to help provide translations of nutrition and sports science to real life, give you some great interviews with a host of experts and guests where you can enhance your knowledge each week. Now, in today's episode 97, Dina and I sit down and chat all about biotics. And I know that sounds kind of scary, but we're talking about prebiotics, probiotics, and postbiotics. Now, interestingly, did you know that the mixture of these actually can improve digestive health and sometimes even reduce distress symptoms that you may have or even reduce GI conditions? Now, we're going to be talking about what prebiotics are, what probiotics are from food and supplement, and what the infamous postbiotics are, because not too many have actually heard about those before. So what we're going to do today is bring you a great conversation. We really, really, really hope that you are engaged and learn a ton. And before we actually get to the episode, I just want to highlight and let you all know that I have a new course coming out relative to this topic, actually. It's quite convenient. This course is called Eliminating GI Distress in Endurance Athletes. And I'm going to cover so much great information about digestive health, how to kind of get going with improving your digestive health, how to fix GI distress, how to eliminate GI distress, give you some great education in this course, along with some nutrient timing strategies for GI distress athletes, what to consider as we get older because the digestive system changes. And I just hope that you can engage with that. And if you'd like more information, just head on over to my website, energyperformance.com. That's energyperformance.com. And now on to our great episode. Well, welcome. Today we are talking about the three P's. And no, Dina, that's not urination we're talking about today. What are we talking about today with the three P's?
The three P's, the biotics, the pre, the pro, the posts.
Hey, yes. And I don't know why my brain goes to this, but when you said biotics, the only thing I could think of, and I'm going to totally date us right now, but do you remember the $6 million man and woman? Do you remember that? Way back when it was a TV show,
it kind of rings a bell, and I want to pretend I don't really know what you're talking about.
Well, he was bionic, right? That's what I'm like, yes. Oh my god, that sounds. But he was like a bionic man, and he could do anything, and it was so cool. Like back in the, I'm not going to say what decades that was, but it was like really cutting edge for the, you know, those decades. Anyway, sorry, I digress, listeners. I do apologize. My brain kind of wanders sometimes like that. Today, yes, we're talking about the biotics. And I kind of like that term, right? Because in the past, we've always just focused on probiotics, and probably for good reason, Dina, because that's really all that was, I would say, what, 10 years ago or so, that was like what was in the press. That was all that was talked about. And unfortunately, you know, it's two brothers or sisters or cousins, whatever, the prebiotics and postbiotics, they didn't get a lot of attention. You know, it was kind of like that first child, second child, third child kind of thing.
It's so true. Probiotics is the star of the show. And I feel like the postbiotic, which we'll talk on here briefly, is relatively new to the scene. I mean, it's been around, a long time, but just relative to probiotics, it's not been a focus point either as a therapeutic or food ingredient.
Yeah, it has been around a long time, obviously in our gut, our digestive system, but I don't think it's been until recently where researchers have really picked on and said, wow, there's a lot of great health benefits from postbiotics. So listeners, we're talking about pre, which is, you know, before. Pro is, you know, favorable, I guess, pro, pro anything. And then post is kind of afterwards. And I know that kind of sounds a little strange, but let's just break this up. I mean, the reason why we're talking about these biotics is we're really talking about gut health, right? For the most part. I mean, there are some, you know, kind of spillovers into immune system functioning, because a lot of our immune system is actually housed within our digestive system. So, you know, whenever an athlete, actually, I just got a question from an athlete this morning, a collegiate athlete, saying, hey, what can I do to boost my immune system? Because there's a lot of illness going around right now because school is, you know, kind of in session. And you know what my number one response was, Dina? It wasn't the typical, like, back in the days.
Check. Oh, man, you're nailing it recently with like 5 minutes really in, nailing it.
I know. I wasn't even thinking about that one. But back in the days, like if an athlete came to us and say, hey, Dina, Bob, what can we do to build our immune system? We'd be like, okay, we'll drink a lot of water and let's see, vitamin C rich foods. And right.
Zinc.
But my first, yeah zinc. Well, my, you know, get some sleep, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But my first response was, we have to take care of your gut. We've got to get your gut strong, because that is really going to help your immune system. So listeners, if you haven't heard this before, gut health, digestive system health is so uber important for so many different health reasons, particularly because of the immune system. But there's, you know, the gut brain axis is very popular, and, you know, in terms of being able to cognitively function well and having good gut health. So there's a lot of associations with the gut, which is why we're talking about the three P's. So why don't we just launch right into this, D, and let's start with prebiotics. So prebiotics, well, do you want to take this one to intro it?
I mean, yeah, because we're doing an overview here, Bob. I think of just the prefix there, pre, meaning pre. It is a compound or substrate in a food that is providing food for the microorganisms in the gut. Like, just simply, that's how I think of it.
Yeah.
Do you have a better or different way to kind of think of what it is?
You know, I think I always highlight what you said. It is food for the gut, for the probiotics. So prebiotics helps probiotics do their job in the gut, basically. So it's, yeah. I mean, we need all of them, obviously, but prebiotics kind of provides that initial, hey, I'm going to really help the gut here by helping probiotics do their job. But, you know, again, previously, we haven't really referred to prebiotics as prebiotics, right? But it's very simple. Like prebiotics, what we're talking about, listeners, because the first thing that I think a lot of listeners think of is like, oh, a supplement, like what supplement do I need to take?
Yeah.
And yes, there are prebiotic supplements out there, but we're talking about food, and specifically we're talking about fiber rich foods. So fruits and vegetables and whole grains and beans and nuts and legumes, like all these foods that have fiber are actually prebiotic rich foods. And that's kind of what we're focusing on for the most part, right?
And Bob, yeah, the, you know, how you're saying supportive of gut health, and kind of just like, it's the pre's are substrates for the pros. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
I hope everyone's still with me. But yeah, like the impact and the gut brain axis you're referring to and gut health, like I know I've seen some charts from some papers where they're trying to elucidate like the benefits, health benefits from prebiotic either supplements or the compounds in the foods, the fibers, mm-hmm. and those other substrates, and the areas in the body that these things are impacting in favorable ways. It's so extensive and mind-blowing to really appreciate not just what it's doing for the microorganisms in the gut and then those downstream impacts, but just the ways in which, like you're saying, brain activity or neurotransmitter function and heart health and immunity and all, it's super extensive and appreciable. So,
and it is, and I love the word extensive, because there is, I don't think there's a system that what we're talking about today, like a system, functional system in the body, that this doesn't have an impact on. So super, super important. And, you know, when we're talking about this also, like we're talking about fiber-rich foods, fiber is kind of a weird one with some athletes too sometimes, right? Because, you know, I have worked a lot with athletes with GI distress. And what I've noticed is we really have to be very wary of fiber. So this is not a compound, like prebiotic fiber is not something where it's like more is better. And it's definitely not less is better, right? There seems to be that, based on the individual, seems to be that happy medium. But even though we have ranges, we don't really know, because in my years working with GI distress with athletes, is sometimes it's baffling. Sometimes an athlete who has GI distress can actually handle a lot of prebiotic fiber in their nutrition plan. And sometimes you can't, right? And sometimes, you know, it's all over the place. But I think that what the point that you were making is prebiotic fiber is uber, uber important to consume on a daily basis. And let's just set this up. Like, besides protein deficiency, which in our mind, you know, we've proven it with the athletes we've worked with, that's probably the number one deficiency we see in our listeners and our athletes. Number two for me is definitely fruit and vegetable intake. And that's what's affecting a lot of prebiotic fiber.
For sure. And to your point about the dosing, like, we have general recommendations in terms of fiber grams per day that all of us should target. But I wish, Bob, this is my dietitian wish, and I haven't seen a tool that's done this well or at all, is like, you know, when you log your food, you're like, oh, yay, 38 grams of fiber. But I wish it would break it down into the prebiotic or give you more details like, oh, yay, this has this much prebiotic fiber, or let alone like soluble and insoluble. I don't see very many tools just to help guide us, because I mean, the lists out there, if you're on the Google machine, like sources of prebiotic fiber, you know, you see everything from bananas to barley or whatever, but it's like, oh, how much is really in there? And then you go down rabbit holes. But nonetheless, just trying to keep it simple as an array of these different kinds of veg, fruit, whole grains. And then there are, I think you're starting to touch on this too, like the inulin or the fructooligosaccharide type things that you can buy as a supplement to boost your prebiotic intake.
You know, really quickly while we're on this, because you did mention soluble and insoluble, and I think some of our listeners don't know what that is, but soluble and insoluble are two different types of fiber, of prebiotic fiber that we're talking about here. And just to clarify, like, they have different roles in the digestive system, right? So soluble usually dissolves in water. It kind of forms like a gel, like substance, if you will. And a lot of people, like, the claim to fame for soluble fiber is it helps with blood cholesterol levels, right? That's like, oh, soluble fiber, reduced cholesterol. That's that claim to fame. Whereas insoluble usually is promoting more movement of material, you know, AKA fecal matter, right? And all that stuff through the digestive system. So what we're talking about here is there are different types of fibers that actually have different results or effects in the body. So a blend of both is, that's kind of what you're saying. It'd kind of be nice to know for logging this stuff, like, what's the contribution of soluble versus insoluble? Now, we know what foods have them in, but it is tough to find these in one place.
Yes. Do you find, Bob, when you're looking at prebiotic food sources, that you have some favorites you recommend, or is that really, you know, up to the individual? And again, like you were saying earlier, like the fiber load or the tolerance therein of the threshold of fiber intake.
Yeah, I don't really have favorites, only because, like I said earlier, I work with a lot of endurance athletes who have GI distress.
Yeah.
And so it just seems like there's not a type of fiber that's yay or nay. It's we really have to figure that out based on the individual's gut response. Yeah. So, you know, I love oats, I love bananas, I love, you know, things like green beans and broccoli, but it may not love some athlete's digestive system. So I usually don't play favorites, but what I do is I look at the categories and where they're getting the fiber. So fruit category, vegetable category, beans, nuts. So that's what I like to see, is where they're coming from first, and where there might be some deficiencies. So maybe they're focusing more on soluble or insoluble fiber, and maybe that's actually producing good or not so good effects on the digestive system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm with you 100% on that. And just, I think too, when you're speaking of GI issues, gosh, there's a lot to unpack there in terms of origin. And geez, even just thinking of how someone was, like, were you breastfed, or, you know, going way back into the womb, these things that can be an issue currently, or contribute perhaps to some things going on. Cause it is not a situation where where more is better with, like, just take boatloads of these prebiotic supplements and eat all the, you know, 8 bananas a day and da da da. So it is a word of caution there. These things do need to be carefully looked at.
Yeah. And you can't, you know, I've done this before because I'm my favorite guinea pig, right? I love doing N of one experiments, but I've done that where I've gone really low fiber intake because I, you know, I tried to kind of simulate the low carb, high fat, you know, regimen. This is years ago. I'm like, oh, how does that feel? Oh my gosh, it tore me up, Dina. Cause like I was so constipated, it wasn't even funny. And then I did the exact opposite. So I'm like, I'm going to eat as many fruits and vegetables and whole grains and just like ramp up my carbs like crazy. And oh boy, was I not fun to be around, if you know what I mean.
I do.
Yes.
I can just
there
imagine.
There were some foul odors coming quite frequently from my person. So that's okay. What you're saying is too low and too high, not good. It's kind of like the whole Goldilocks things, right? You want to find the one that's just right for you.
Yes. And sometimes people have, like, if you are complaining of bloating, gas, loose stool, constipation, sometimes we have to annoyingly go through all of the kinds of foods you eat regularly and piece them apart, maybe do some elimination thing, reintroduce. We can find that there's some prebiotic sources of food or prebiotic food sources that can be problematic and take them out for a short while and maybe work on this quote unquote healing of the gut and then bring those foods back in and see how well they're now tolerated.
Yeah.
So it's a process.
It is a process. And we're going to, you know, listeners, we're going to expand on all three of these in future episodes. So we're going to take prebiotics and have its own episode, probiotics and postbiotics. So we're going to really kind of unearth more of this. But, you know, I think before we move on to probiotics, Dina, when it comes to prebiotic supplements, what say ye to our listeners? I mean, there are so many of these supplements on the market. I kind of shake my head at them, but what's your take on it first? Then I'll add mine and then we can move on.
So some of those are recommended by functional medicine practitioners. Some are recommended, you know, when we're doing gut testing, like stool testing and trying to heal whatever findings. I mean, I personally, or I guess professionally, have used a couple of those for treating some issues that were going on that was identified through gut microbiome testing. But it's not something I start with off the bat is recommending those simply because it can cause some more issues initially than help. So that's kind of what I was thinking of first when you were asking that, like, well, there's certain use cases, but sometimes they are recommended before thoroughly doing a full assessment. And so it just goes into my worry hat, like, oh gosh, when meeting an athlete and they're taking these kinds of supplements and having a lot of issues, like, oh wow, maybe we should back down on that and figure out some other food things first.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And, you know, I think one of my mantras is time and place, right? There's a time and a place for things. The time and the place for, I think, prebiotic supplements is probably not right away because we do like to see what's going on from the food introduction first and then move to the supplements later. So that's kind of our message when it comes to just prebiotic supplements, because there are so many foods that are prebiotics. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. It's like, it's not limited at all. There's so many out there. Right. So let's do our due diligence and do as much as we can through food first, at least with prebiotics.
Well, we'll delve into that one more in a future episode. Bob, do you want to move on to our probiotics and talk about what's different with a probiotic versus a pre or a post?
Because these are fun, right? I mean, I think all of them are fun. Yeah. But when it comes to probiotics, because most people know about probiotics, at least you've heard about probiotics. And, you know, the difference is these are actually live microorganisms that have beneficial effects for our gut, right? So now we're talking about things like, you know, bacteria and protozoa and viruses. And I know it sounds kind of scary, like, whoa, wait a second here. Yes, you're actually introducing these live microorganisms into your gut, because here's the thing. We have a balance of good and bad bacteria. Obviously, we want it to favor more good bacteria. So the prebiotic fiber, which we just talked about, will help those probiotics do their job. But there are some huge benefits to eating probiotic rich foods, which we'll talk about here in a second. But also, you know, I think we do need to mention the supplements, because that's got to be $1 billion industry right now, just with probiotics, right?
There's so many probiotic supplements, Bob.
So many, and it's confusing. And remember, like the probiotics, they're helping distribute the good and the bad bacteria, right? They're helping with digestion. They're supporting the lining of the guts, right? So there's so many great benefits to probiotics. And oftentimes, Dina, I find, you know, there's a term called dysbiosis, and that's just a disruption of bacteria in the gut, basically. Dysbiosis is something's going wrong downstairs, right? And I feel like a lot of people, if they have anything gastric, you know, issues, if you will, GI distress, all of a sudden I find people kind of popping the pills. They're like, okay, which probiotic supplement should I take? And I think that's the wrong way to start. Now, that can definitely be part of it, but should we kind of transition into, like, because there are a good handful of foods, they're not really popular with many people, but I feel like we need to mention these because, again, you get so many other benefits from the foods in addition to possible supplementation.
Yeah, I mean, because you think of, okay, these are live cultures or live creatures. It's like, that sounds
that
scary.
That makes it sound a little scary, yeah.
What is this thing that I'm eating? I mean, yeah, I immediately go to yogurt because it's like one of the most popular probiotic kinds of foods, or kefir.
Kefir.
You say tomato.
Some people do say kefir. And like,
I've heard
sometimes
that word
I'm like,
pronounced
what the
so many
heck
different
is that?
ways.
Is that like heifer, like the cow? No. Okay. Anyway.
So those are the top ones that I think of, but there are a number of others. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything fermented, right? But again, sometimes we don't know two things. One, we don't know what that fermented food is. Two, I believe here's just my soapbox. You go in the grocery store these days and there's so many crazy products out there that are trying let's just say this, they're aspiring to be probiotic rich foods, but I don't think, like, you cannot go wrong with yogurt and kefir and even like tempeh, natto, fermented pickles, yeah. Sauerkraut. Although here's a little side note, if you eat pickles and sauerkraut, you have to get them from the refrigerated section because that's where the live cultures are. It's not the ones that are sitting on the shelf with a 20-year shelf life, right? Those are not, I mean, those do not yeah. have the probiotics as the refrigerated ones do. Now, kimchi is honestly one of my favorites, Dina. And I brought that up. It's kind of getting up there with the whole peanut butter thing, but kimchi just, I mean, you cannot discount that. And that's just basically fermented cabbage with spices in it. It is so wonderful if you like just a little bit of kick, but you know, miso soup is fantastic for probiotics.
It's really
I did want to mention this thing, cause this is uber popular with my collegiate athletes, kombucha. And Dina, have you ever made kombucha at home before?
No, but I remember years ago when you were making it and brought that blob, the starter, whatever you call that thing.
The Scooby.
Yeah, that. And I was like, what is this Martian thing that you brought in a jar? Because I didn't know what kombucha was. That was years ago. Yeah.
I have made kombucha and I still make it from time to time, but I've taken some time off because it's kind of labor intensive. I'm not going to lie. Right. And when you see this alien looking disc, the Scooby, and that's kind of what does the magic. But my whole point here is this, when you make kombucha, you actually have to have and add sugar to it, like white granulated sugar, because that's what feeds the Scooby, which then ferments. Right. So that's the whole fermentation process. My issue is when you're buying kombucha in the grocery store, and maybe this could even go back to yogurt too, if you're getting a lot of added sugar in there, like added sugar, not just the normal sugar, but like the added sugars, you really have to keep an eye on that because added sugars are actually not good for the guts, right? So now we're talking about the balance of good and bad bacteria. Added sugars are horrible for the gut. Right. But so just keep that in mind. Like, yeah, you can get kombucha off the shelf, but you might have 20 grams of added sugar. And what's the payoff? What's the return on investment? Right. Is it the fermentation of the kombucha, or is that going to overpower the 20 grams of added sugar or not?
Right.
Yeah. And so just buyer beware.
It's a good point, Bob. And I remember reading some sort of consensus statement. I was trying to find that name of this. Oh, the International Scientific Association for Probiotic and Prebiotic. But anyway, the point is not all fermented foods are probiotics. And you were touching on that. So we have to look for live cultures. It has to confer some sort of health benefit. So not all, any and all fermented food will actually technically fall into the probiotic category. So it can get a little confusing. We will delve into that more when we go into our probiotic episode in the future in more detail.
Yeah. And that's what honestly makes it so difficult for us, for consumers too, right? And we're like, okay, well, we're eating pickles or sauerkraut or miso or yogurt, but sometimes it, you know, like you're saying, Dina, sometimes it actually may not have what you think is in there, or at least at the right strength, because there are some different strains and you know, different things we need to look for. But, you know, my recommendation for food is usually if we could try to get 2 to 3 servings a day of probiotic rich food, that comes from nowhere except my own experience in trying to get people to eat more fermentable foods. But then you question it like, well, does the, just like you were saying, like, does it actually have what it should have in it? That's why I think supplements, like probiotic supplements, have been so on fire these days. Yeah. And they're not going away. Like there's, it seems like I get turned on to a different probiotic supplement every single week. Like there's, they just keep on hitting the market, right? So we acknowledge that. And, you know, I'll tell you that at certain times I actually cycle in my personal supplementation, I'll cycle in probiotics, but they're different probiotics I'd like to talk about. Cause there's really, depending on what you read, there's 3 main categories of probiotic supplements, and it's all based on the, what do they call that? The it's not the genus, the, I don't even know. Like I totally phyla? Forgot.
Is phyla? It the phyla?
Yeah. I don't remember my high school biology or whatever it was. Yeah.
Kingdom, phyla, but anyway, and then something or other. Yeah.
Yeah. Genus or whatever. But my point is, like, there's 3 main categories of these probiotic supplements. And what I find is a lot of athletes are just like, oh yeah, like I take a probiotic supplement. Then I ask them, well, you know, take a photo of the back or let me know what's in it. Just really take a photo, because it's hard to pronounce these things. All these bacteria, these live cultures. But what I find is, you know, usually either these probiotics don't have as many strains of bacteria that we need them to have, or maybe they don't have as many colony forming units, which are CFUs. And that's usually in the bottle, you see like 1 million, 15 billion, like whatever. Those are the CFUs. And I would say normally you want a higher level, but I have also found that it is individual for the person. But I just want to, like, D, if I can kind of highlight, because I know these categories off the top of my head, so I want to talk about these really quickly, and I'm not going to pronounce them correctly.
Okay.
Because it's next to impossible. But like the first category of probiotic supplements are the lacto and the bifido, right, category. And there are, hundreds of strains underneath those, right? Yeah. So let's just, when you see something that starts with lacto or bifido, that's one category of probiotic supplements, right? The second category is Saccharomyces. I can actually pronounce that one. So that one's easy. So whenever you see sacro, and S-A-C-C might be an H-R-Y, something like that. But sacro is another category. And then the last one is the bacillus. So the reason I'm bringing this up, we've got lacto and then bifido is one. We've got Saccharomyces is 2, and we've got bacillus is 3. The reason I bring this up is because all 3 of them have different functions in the body. And we'll break this up on our future episode of probiotics and when we get more into supplements. But I just want to highlight, because just because you're taking a probiotic supplement doesn't mean the probiotic supplement is working to the best nature that it can for your body. Whether you have GI distress or not doesn't matter, but for health, right? So you might need different strains. And that's why we typically recommend having at least, I would say 5 or 6 different types of strains in a probiotic supplement. But you also have to be specific in what category you're taking. So sorry to be a little bit complex with this, but I think it's really one of the missing pieces that a lot of our listeners, a lot of athletes don't understand, is a probiotic is not just a probiotic supplement. There's so many different types and strains and categories.
And just reiterating this important point, Bob, is what is it we're looking for when we think of biotics, right? So we're looking for maintenance of health, improving health, reducing risk for disease or chronic disease. You know, then there's the little things that are huge, like the GI distress in athletes, weight regulation and so on, mood disorders, a whole host of things. So we will touch on this more as we go into these future episodes. Like, what is it like? Who gives a hoot about these things, you know, and trying to apply it here in our real lives?
Right, right. So I think the take-home message is, yes, probiotics are extremely important. We want to promote more food-based probiotics, but we also realize that it's a little bit more limiting because they're, number one, there aren't that many fermentable foods that people enjoy. Let's put it that way, right? Because just that's the key. And, you know, we can only eat yogurt so much, although I could probably eat, I do eat it every single day. So that's not an issue. But I think that's the issue in terms of just not being able to find a lot of sources, like, you know, versus contrast that with prebiotics, where there's ample sources of prebiotic rich foods. Probiotics are a lot less. And that's why supplements are so popular. And, you know, I think I'm very probiotic supplement, but time and place, right? What's the time? What's the place? What reason are we using this for? And what type of category or what probiotic strains or cultures are we actually looking for to improve all those markers that you listed earlier, Dee?
Exciting. Ooh, well, third category, here we go. Postbiotics. Bob, it's the after party.
It is the after party. I was wondering how to introduce this, and what a great way of saying it's the after party. Woo! Like there's all this crazy stuff and crazy guys and girls hanging out in your gut. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's time to go home and people are like, no, 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 it's too early. Let's keep the party going. And that's what postbiotics does, is it keeps the party going. I love
we
that.
Don't stop. We don't stop.
We don't stop. Well, and I mean, good point. Like your digestive system does not stop, right? Well, sometimes it stops up, but that's a whole nother issue we'll talk about. But postbiotics, I think, are kind of they're the newest kid on the block for sure. Like I said earlier, I mean, they've been around in our system forever, but it's just, I think, until somewhat recently where researchers are like, hey, there's a lot of great things going on here, like with this party. So, you know, this like postbiotics, the way I think about it, Dina, is it's just the waste that's left over after the body digests pre and probiotics. And it's through this waste product, waste material, where these postbiotics are just creating some amazing things for health and for, like, you name it. And I think highlighted on this list are short chain fatty acids. Like that's a lot of where the research is right now and what a lot of people are speaking about when it comes to postbiotics.
And just to differentiate, is this true, Bob? I think postbiotics technically are not live, right? These are
correct.
It's a byproduct, like you're saying.
It's a byproduct.
So it's an inanimate or dead thing. It's not
exactly
an alive thing. And I believe too, you have to have specific strains, just like you were saying with the probiotics. We have to really, you know, look at what we're talking about. So it's not just a general category of bacteria. It's very specific, I believe. So I know we'll touch on that more too when we go into it in depth in a future episode, but
for sure. Yeah. And just remember, I mean, with all of this, you know, with the short chain fatty acids that are produced, you know, what we're talking about is we're talking about the function that postbiotics have on gut health. It strengthens the gut barrier. It can help reduce inflammation. It can actually help with antimicrobial activity. So again, some pathogens, if pathogens make it down there, like this is where postbiotics really shine. And, you know, first and foremost, it's really about improving health markers. And that's, you know, it's the thing, like you don't have the after party without guests in the party first, right? So the guests of the party are your prebiotics, right? And maybe some probiotics if you're eating those foods. And then the party is what's happening when the pre and the pro start hanging out and dancing on the dance floor and doing what they're doing, right? So that's really what we're talking about, is you need the guests and you need the party for the post party to happen.
These are great visuals, by the way.
It is. Well, I'm glad you mentioned the whole party thing, because now I'm just going with it.
It's fantastic. Yes.
So again, like, food helps, like prebiotic rich food, probiotic rich food will help postbiotics be created, essentially, because it's the digestive process of those pre and pro that help the post form. That's a tongue twister.
I mean,
right?
You're nailing it.
Think
though.
About it.
I'm just over here chuckling at all the peas happening.
But, so for now, like, I don't think you need to worry about anything else with postbiotics, except make sure you're getting enough pre and pro. And then that should, unless there's some really major issues going on downstairs, that should take care of the postbiotic production.
And we will definitely talk more, like, if there are some issues with the downstairs party or the scene, you know, what do you clue into or things? Of course, you need to work with your practitioner who's qualified to really go into this more, but just trying to provide some education and tools for all of our awesome listeners.
For sure. And let me just say this as we wrap this episode up, Dee. If you are listening and you do have GI distress, it's not normal. Okay. So I was told that earlier in my career, because I was plagued with GI distress as an endurance athlete, and people are like, no, it's just normal. It's part of the game. And no, it's not. Mm-hmm. Like, something is going on downstairs. It absolutely needs to be addressed. So go work with a professional. I would recommend going to a gastroenterologist, going to a sport dietitian who emphasizes a little bit more of the digestive system with athletes, just because these specialists will know, well, one, the learning curve will be a lot less, and they'll know, like, where to start, and, you know, hopefully how to get you there successfully. So if you're not plagued with GI distress, congratulations, and just use the information that we presented on just improving your gut health and immune system functioning and brain health and cognitive functioning, just overall, right? I think there's kind of a couple different things, but yeah, like Dina was saying, you know, we're going to break up these three biotics into future episodes and dig a little bit more into them. I think Dina, you would share this sentiment where we would actually love to hear stories about our listeners, you know, not to get too graphic, but about their gut health, right? About, you know, what's going on down there, because this really relates into the types of food you're eating or not eating. And I think that's really important, just to, you know, for us to maybe start addressing some of these questions, you know, on our Ask Us Anything. So listeners, throw us an email, you know, hello@insidesportsnutrition.com. We would love to hear about your gut woes. I mean, this is kind of what we do. You know, we talk about, you know, urination, we talk about poop all the time. So just not too much on our episodes yet.
Exactly. Super helpful. Well, listeners, we will leave it there for now. Thank you so much for tuning in with us. And Bob, we will catch everybody on the next episode.
Well, we hope you enjoyed episode 97, our biotic episode, and hopefully you have now gained a little more knowledge into how to improve your digestive health by using different foods and possibly different supplements if that's your thing also. But we really wanted to just say thank you again for listening. And for next week's episode, stay tuned, because Dina and I are talking about another very hot topic called REDS, and that is relative energy deficiency in sports. So that is applicable to males, females, all genders, all ages, all sports. So I would highly, highly recommend tuning into that. If you do have a sport nutrition question, and it can be about just anything, be sure to just send us an email, hello@insidesportsnutrition.com, and let us know what it is. We'd love to answer that. We'll get back to you either personally, or we'll devote an entire episode just to answering some of your questions. We would absolutely love that. And head on over also to our website, insidesportsnutrition.com, and check out all of our show notes, check out our deals, our sponsors. You can find out just such great information. And at the same time, please go over to your podcast platform of choice and give us a review. That really helps us kind of spread the love and spread the word around the world to other athletes and individuals, just to share our knowledge. So give us a 5-star rating, give us a great review. We so, so appreciate it. If you like more information about what Dina and I do at our respective businesses, head on over to nutritionmechanic.com for everything about Dina, and head on over to energyperformance.com. That's energyperformance.com for what I am up to. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the host and the guests involved and do not represent a replacement for medical consultation with your doctor. The information and opinions provided here are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease or medical condition. This podcast is for information, education, and entertainment purposes only.